for the fans, by the fans. This is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with another week's helping of the magic from the Non-League Football game. Just me this week, me, myself and I, due to, my own inability to run for a train, but that's a story that I'm sure I'll be able to tell anybody that asked me personally. So no Dave Anderson, but several guests on the telephone and plenty of stories to report. So without further ado, let's get matters underway. So let's start this week with a club who needs some love from the non-league community. When Storm Dennis hit just a couple of weekends ago, social media was already full of images of waterlogged pitches and damage from Storm Ciara. But Dennis saw those in the vicinity of the River Severn hit hard. One such club, Stourport Swifts of the Midland Premier League. Their Just Giving page has been busy with donations to help the club. But to tell us more, let's welcome to the Non-League Football Show press officer at Stourport Swifts, Ian Johnson. Welcome, Ian.
Hello, Tim.
Ian, you're no stranger to the issues that befall non-league football, particularly in terms of the weather. But, I mean, has this been perhaps the toughest couple of weeks ever for you guys?
Oh, no doubt. I mean, it's 20 years since the pitch last flooded. And 2 weeks ago, at least we were used to it. But a week later, was the biggest flood we've ever seen. And certainly talking to some of the older fans that we've got, the biggest one we've ever had. So the pitch was under 4 feet of water over the front of the stand, and we've got our own little river right down the side of the clubhouse, and it did its best to fill the clubhouse as well.
Yeah, and so had you already suffered some damage then from the first storm, Storm Ciara, at the start?
Yes.
Of
yes.
So you were already on the back foot and already under pressure as it was. And then, I mean, what was it like to wake up? What, I guess on the Sunday morning, you're then getting calls and pictures being sent to you of the state of the pitch.
Yeah, well, on the for the second flood, we just cleared up from the first one, and we felt we'd done a great job because Droitwich, who shared the ground with us, got a full team of guys in to clear everything. And it was in very good nick, even though we say ourselves after that one subsided. But after the second one, I think the worst day was probably the Wednesday night. We couldn't even get near the gate. It was more than Wellington deep. So even with your wellies on, wading up to the gate, you were going to get wet feet. So we had to leave it for a day before we could even get in.
And I guess the worst thing is, this isn't like you're running water. It's not like a tap or a burst pipe, is it? This isn't particularly nice water either.
No, the water was filthy. And the mess it's left on the pitch and around the ground is incredible. I'm sure we've got beer barrels and containers and gas bottles from way down the River Severn.
And where's the... What sort of physical state is the club in now? Have the waters all subsided?
Most of the rivers subsided down to a, I won't say respectable level, because it's still very high. But the water on the pitch has mainly disappeared. We've still got a very heavy puddle the length of the stand down the one side of the ground, which I think will still take a few, certainly a couple of weeks, we suspect, to dry up enough so we can get on the pitch and start doing some work.
And I guess, you know, I'm looking out the window here. It's still raining where I am. It you know, the weather's still not great, and there's still water coming down. It's literally got nowhere to go either, is it?
Well, that's right. I mean, it's not been the rain so much that's been causing the problem. Although two home games prior to the flood were called off because the pitch was waterlogged, the damage has come from the river coming up very heavily.
And where's that left the club? Was the club insured for these sort of things? Because we hear so many stories of not being able to insure against floods.
We're not insured for any flood damage because we're on the floodplain, and no insurance company would touch us. The buildings and the clubhouse and everything in it are insured for everything else, but flood damage is down to us.
And any estimates as to what cost that damage has been?
Well, we've had a visit from the Football Foundation this morning, and we've been desperately trying to tot up everything that's been damaged and will need to be replaced. And they're very keen to help get the club back to a position where we can start to play games there. But the tally that we'd come to was £20,000.
Yeah, and that's just the physical damage there, I guess, as well. And yeah, you know, there's the other things like a loss of income. You say, you know, you're not the only club that's playing at the ground. You're now, you know, going to be ending up probably playing several games away from your ground, but that's probably further cost and certainly loss of income from the bars and things like that. So how, I know you've got the Just Giving page, and I'll give details of that later on, but how are you planning to just continue as a football club?
Well, we've had some very generous donations, as you've said, but on the football side, a lot of our neighbours locally have offered to help, and we'll be playing our game against Racing Club Warwick, our home game, at Stourbridge on Saturday. We've got other people that we've talked to from Kidderminster Harriers, Elzo in town, and even as far away as Boldmere, offering to help. So we're going to try and get as many of those games in as we can that we're likely to miss. Fingers crossed, we hope to be back in action middle to end of March with games. We've got a rearranged game against Lytown that's already been called off once to get in, I think, on the 17th. And then a big game for us is Worcester City at home on the 21st, which we are desperate to be ready for, because that will probably be our biggest home game of the season.
Well, that's it. In when we're looking at terms of lost income, a game like you know, Worcester City, whoever else, you've got Coventry United in your division as well, where they come with big travelling support, it's important for you to be able to play those games on a Saturday and gain that extra revenue. And just, I guess, at the start of the season, this all becomes part of your budget as well when you're planning, doesn't it? It's great. It'll be great news if you can get back before the end of the month there. But are there costs as well in the cleanup? But I guess, you know, this water's gone across all the terracing. Does that all have to be washed down, all the backs of the stands and everything like that?
Yeah, we will need to do that. Certainly the first two steps in the stand are, it's almost like grease, an inch of grease on the floor. It's too slippery to walk on. So we've got to get that cleared up before we can use the stand.
Yeah, every week we talk about how hard it is to get people involved and help run a football club. I guess it sounds like you've had plenty of hands on deck to help with the clear up there. But how important is it for local people to get behind Stourport Swifts and just, you know, maybe give an hour's time 1 week just to help you with the clean up?
Well, every additional head that we can get down on a Tuesday and a Thursday, which are our regular sort of maintenance days and always has been, but the amount of extra work you can get through, particularly with people who've got some sort of skills, whether it be carpentry, good with working with lawnmowers, and all that sort of stuff, it's so helpful because then we can get on with the more mundane maintenance side of things, just painting and that sort of thing throughout the season, obviously when it's not raining. But the boards that we have, the advertising boards that we have on the fence around the pitch, have taken a terrible hammering, and I think we're going to have to replace most of them. And that's one of the things we've been talking about with the Worcester FA, with maybe looking to do something with that in the summer. But it's a long, very labour-intensive job just to keep on top of keeping things tidy.
It is, and we wish you, you know, all the best of luck with that. But you sound like it's not the stuffing out of you. In you sound like you're still there for the long term.
Oh, absolutely, it's been really gratifying to see the number of people that have come forward to offer help. People like the ex-players that maybe we haven't seen for such a long time, just phoning in and saying, if you need any help, let us know. And we can get, I'm sure, we'll call upon a dozen, maybe two dozen, local former players and people that maybe even don't come down to the games, and we'd love them to, but they are still genuinely interested in the switch. So we'll be calling on a lot of them to try and hit that March 21st deadline.
Yeah, and it's great to hear that also that you're getting the backing of the authorities and help from there. Has that been easy to come by, or have they come to you, or have you had to go to them?
The Football Foundation through the Worcester FA was from talking to the two gentlemen that came to see us this morning. They have identified the five worst hit clubs in the county, and today he's visiting all of them with a view to providing support to get them back up and running.
Well, that is good to hear, and we applaud them because they so often get the rough end of the stick. Let's talk about that, about the league there. I mean, I was looking at your fixtures anyway. In a way, you were lucky that you're almost up to date with your league fixtures and sort of ahead of the curve there. I guess it's you're looking at a mid-table finish now this season, but the shake-up coming again at the end of the season with all around you, how do you think that's going to change maybe the division you'll end up in or certainly the opposition you're going to be facing next season?
Yeah, well, I think definitely the revamp that's going to take place at the end of the season. And I understand the sentiment where it's designed to give all clubs less travelling, I think it will radically change the structure of the Midland League. I think the Eastern teams, the East Midland ones, so the likes of Newark, South Normanton, Selston, even Racing Warwick, again, who only recently came back in, could go into different leagues just based on geographical location, and to the west, Westfield have already moved into the Hellenic League last season. So I think with the West Midland League pretty much being disbanded, four teams will definitely come out of the West Midlands League, which will certainly reduce our travelling, but even the promotion and relegation could affect us significantly in terms of what the Premier League looks like for the Midland League next season.
It's not easy being involved in a football club, is it? Everything's complicated, but we do it for all the right reasons, and it keeps a smile on our face. Now, talking about keeping a smile on our face, let's mention on Saturday you are playing your game at Stourbridge, that Midland Football League League Cup third round tie between us. Stourport Swifts and Racing Club Warwick. I guess that's a 3 o'clock kickoff at the War Memorial Ground.
Yes, it will be. Yep. Normal kickoff time. Normal admission charges for our home games will apply. I'd like to say a big thank you to Stourbridge for being really first to come forward and offer everything they can to make sure we can get the game played at the lowest cost to us. So thank you very much, Stourbridge Football Club.
All very good. And of course, as many people, if you can make it down there, then that'd be fantastic as well. I did mention the Just Give Insight. Now, I think you've hit your initial £2,000 target, but I'm sure any more will help. So anybody looking to donate, it's justgiving.com/crowdfunding/StourportSwiftsFC. I'm sure just do a search on Google, you can find there. And I'm sure, Ian, all donations will be gratefully received. Thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show, Ian. We wish you well with what the clean-up operation and just getting your club back on its feet. And we'll be keeping an eye on how things go and hopefully speak to you again very soon.
Thank you very much. No problem.
Now, all this rain and wet weather is probably a big stress for any chairman and any groundsman at non-league. So I'd imagine our next guest is having to monitor his blood pressure pretty close, as he's not just the groundsman at his club, but also the chairman as well. Top that off with a playoff chase and a trip to the league leaders this week. And talking to myself was probably low on his list, but it's with pleasure that I welcome back to the Non-League Football Show chairman and head groundsman at Taunton Town, Mr. Kevin Sturmey.
Hi, Tim.
Hi, Kevin. Now, how is that blood pressure then?
My blood pressure's all right. It's everything else that's the problem. Yeah, I never seem to suffer with any blood pressure problems, but my knee's taking a hammering. I'm having a new one in the summer, and not before time, to be quite honest. And it's been tough the last couple. Well, it's been a tough winter, but the last couple of days we got on it Tuesday. Simon and I, who's the groundsman here, we both slit the pitch both ways on Tuesday, and I think came, and then as usual the forecast was wrong, and so we had drizzle sort of most of yesterday, and probably stopped about 4 o'clock. So we managed to get on it from four until, well, virtually kick off, to be quite honest, and got some more water off. Did a bit of hand splitting, which doesn't feel like you're doing much at the time, but afterwards. Yeah, everything aches. So it's been an interesting winter again.
Because you lost Saturday's game against Walton Casuals to the weather, but as you say, you managed to get the game on against Hendon midweek. Now, as a groundsman, with those sodden pitches, you want the game to be played, don't you? But it's a catch-22 because you must fear all the damage that's going to come, you know, at the final whistle.
Yeah, to be quite honest, it held up really well. The warm-ups, both teams were, you know, really good in the fact that warm-ups were sensible and they moved around. And to be quite honest, like a few of our lads said, after the pitch through the middle was absolutely fantastic because it was very slick and it was generally firm. It's just we've got pockets of, in horse racing terms, I describe it. It was good to soft with soft patches. So and those soft patches obviously don't go away until it stops raining. And it wasn't too bad, apart from our lads' quick feet. I haven't even looked down the bottom of the pitch. I couldn't make it last night. My legs were gone and my back was gone. So I just had a look at our end, and that looked like it was the 3 o'clock at Exeter had been run on the quick feet. But we had rain overnight, quite a lot of rain again. And it's washed in all right. There's the patches we know which are soft, we can repair them with a bit of sanding and divoting, and I'll get on the Simon and I will get on the quadruplay when we have a dry day, and we'll repair it and hopefully get some more air into it, and if possible try and get a vertidrain book for next week to get some more air in and a bit deeper.
Yeah, I often hear groundsmen telling me about the vertidraining and the importance, and like you're saying, that the hand slitting, that even the tiniest bit of work makes a difference, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. The lines was run before, well, when it stopped raining yesterday, both had water on them, so I bought a very expensive hand spike, which is a seed slotter, really, but it's really good, and you know, it disperses the water. It's quite heavy, but when you're actually pushing it, goes in the ground really well, so obviously that weights it down. I brought an old one I had in at home, which was a domestic one, which is basically 4-inch nails that you push along, which seems to bounce out of the ground. But yeah, that got rid of the water on the linesman's runs, and then we got a couple of bow dry water removers. My vice chairman, I think it was last summer or summer before, said we need a couple of those, so he bought a couple of those. We got great range of kit here. It's just sometimes, you know, it's got to be dry enough to get on the pitch.
I think things count against you, don't they?
Yeah, you can do more damage. The best thing I was ever told was get on it when you can and then stay off it when you can't. And that is such a good mantra to have. You know, sometimes you have to spend all day and even into, you know, turning the floodlights on sometimes to get the work finished. Because the rain we've had this year, you know, the rain we have every year is bad now, isn't it? It's not like there's not four seasons anymore. We seem to have summer and winter and sort of late summer but not winters like the old days where it was cold and frost and you know, hard frost. We don't seem to have them anymore.
Yeah, it's quite often it's the water that does the damage, isn't it? I mean, we spoke with Stourport's Swift earlier on. I mean, their pitch has been under river water for days, and they can't really even start the clean-up properly now. But what sort of damage does that sort of thing do to a pitch?
Yeah, obviously it can put things into the ground you obviously don't want. You know, I suppose it's amazing because when you look around the sort of the Worcester area and the Severn, you've got Worcestershire County Cricket Club that floods. You've got Worcester Racecourse that floods. So the Severn, you know, must be sadly very close to all these grounds. Poole, you know, for example, Poole have got a real problem this year. Because one end they got a stream which is at sea level once it rains. And you know, when we played there, one end of the pitch was absolutely perfect. The other end, it just can't absorb any more water. You know, you feel sorry for them because, you know, people go onto social media and start talking, you know, rubbish like the sun's out. Yeah, well, okay, but it needs to be out at 25 degrees and the wind needs to be 90 miles an hour, then it might dry. You know, people are all experts behind social media and, you know, I think it's disrespectful to all clubs when they like to make comments when they know nothing about what they're talking about. And, you know, we all want to play football. That's what we're here for. We give up, you know, I've obviously got three roles here. I am paid for one of those roles. But chairman and head groundsman are purely voluntary. You know, we don't want to call games off. We do everything in our power to play football. And it's disrespectful to clubs to criticise them when ultimately all we're trying to do is play football. Sometimes you have to be sensible, like Saturday when we have Alton casuals. They were leaving at 9, we knew that. So on Friday, there was no need for a pitch inspection. If the weather had been right, the forecast was rain 12 till 6. So from 6 a.m. until 3 p.m, we'd have been able to work on the pitch. And if that had been the case, we'd have got the game on. Unfortunately, at 8:15 and 8:45, it absolutely hammered down. And we were left with no choice. And you know, I saw someone had said, there's a precautionary inspection. Does that mean they think the game's going to be on? Well, no, it's a precaution. It's a precaution just in case, because we can't predict the weather and the forecasters can't predict it either. With all their expertise, pretty rarely do they get it right unless it's a storm, and they seem to know when the storms are coming in.
Yeah, it seems to be I call it a Teflon job, being a weather a predictor, because they can get it wrong and still they don't get the grief that everybody else like yourself get. I mean, yeah. Interesting you mentioned Paul there, because going back to division and where you are, Southern League, Premier South, you know, just on the edge of the playoff zone there, games in hand though to get back in there, but the weather may still play a part, because you mentioned Paul Towns, because they're already on those three games per week before the end of the season now, and they've only managed to play 8 games at home in the league this season, which means that of those games that they're going to be playing, you know, back to back almost as the season finishes, they're going to be on the home soil as well. So it's not had many games on there, and then it's going to take a battering over the last part of the season. So that could possibly have an impact on the way the table shakes up.
Yeah, well, also not forgetting that I think Hayes and Yedding are obviously there on a Thursday. So that's going to affect, you know, if you're playing, you know, maybe Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday and travelling away, it does take its toll in non-league. You know, our players and you know, for example, the Hendon players, I would imagine they're all straight back to work today. So you don't get the rest and recuperation. And when your body thinks you're all right, you know, sorry, your mind thinks you're all right and your body isn't, that's when mistakes are made. And that's what happens in non-league, because players make mistakes because they're not able to get the rest and recuperation that the top players get who just play football for a living. You know, these guys work for a living and then play football at a very good level part-time, but don't get the rest that they need and the massages that they need and probably the chiropractor appointments they need and the physio they need. And the oxygen chambers and the ice chambers and the ice baths and everything else that players, you know, all athletes now full-time are trained to the optimum. And the managers are now told, no, you can't play him because he's not fit. Whereas in the old days, it was, right, take some ibuprofen, paracetamol, have a cortisone and get on with it.
And you've obviously got a more local game for you guys, I guess, on Saturday. You're a trip to Truro, who are top of the table at the moment. A more local game, but important in terms of the playoff ambitions that you've got as well.
Yeah. We beat Truro, to be quite honest, quite comfortably. We were really good. I think that was back in October, winning 2-0. And I thought we were really good that night. Truro just found a way to win this year, haven't they? And, Hendon was potentially a banana skin on Saturday for them in such good form. And then they go and, give them a hiding 4-1. I think there were, a couple of errors, which, we talked about. And they do have the players that will punish you. I think that's probably why they are at the top. They will punish you. You make mistakes, they will punish you. And they've got some really good players there. Obviously got a good young manager with contacts at Plymouth. And they're not no team is to be feared, I think, in this league. Doesn't matter if it's bottom v top, you can't take anything for granted. We'll go there full of confidence and give it our best shot. If we could go there and get the points, then maybe that will just peg Truro back a little bit. And you see teams have had little mini runs of defeats or draws. Truro haven't really had that. So we're hopeful we can start that for them.
You obviously missed out on promotion last year, the pool on penalties in the playoffs. How's that impacted on the field and off the field? Has it had positive and negatives losing in the playoffs?
I think a lot. We've built our fan base really well. We're really disappointed with the crowd last night. But then a lot of kids won't come, and the weather was pretty miserable. And when it rains, people think the game will be off. Instead of just if we haven't said anything, it means the game's on. just turn up at 7:45. That's all we ask you, or 7 o'clock or whatever it is. Please turn up and support us. But there are reasons midweek why you don't get the crowds. But our newer fans have been totally spoiled for the last, 3-4 years. Mm. All they've seen is success. And, sometimes when we lose the game, it's very easy to blame and saying, we shouldn't do this, we shouldn't do that. Well, I've just said, that mistakes will happen in non-league football. That's because it is non-league football and it's not a full-time sport. I think we went under the radar a little bit last year, with Weymouth pushing them all the way, a really good club, and they've probably gone under the radar in step two this year. Teams perhaps took us, perhaps were too open against us last year. This year we've noticed that teams are, a lot more, Hendon were very good and they hit us on the break, but they were happy to sit back and try and close the game out. And teams will find a way to try and stop us, I think, this year. Whereas last year, I think a lot more teams were a bit gung-ho and felt they could outplay us. And we just had that momentum, winning a league so comfortably the year before, which doesn't come, through luck to win the league by 19 points and lose one game by default. We knew we were a good side, and I said to a lot of people, don't be surprised if we're not pushing and we could go up very quickly. If we'd gone up, would we have been ready? Yes and no. I don't think anybody can say they're ready. Nobody has hot money sat in their bank account saying, there we go, there's the budget for next year. We live hand to mouth like all non-league clubs, and we work our proverbials off to generate the money to hopefully have a competitive budget. But we aren't in the top. I would say we're probably not in the top 6 or 7, 8 budgets this year, as we weren't last year. I think we're ambitious. We make no secret of that. We want to be competing at the top of any league that we're in. And this year it's even harder. I worked out there's 13 counties that are covered by this league, and I think that's why it makes it such an open league. Teams changed quite dramatically. Hendon were brilliant when they came here last year, beginning of the season, and then had problems. And they've come back last night and we've had a 3-0 draw again, against them. So, Hendon are looking very strong and they'll take points off teams.
And it's often, you know, we ask clubs that, you know, going for promotion, you know, what are you ready for the next level? And as you've mentioned there, yeah, I think you've already got the biggest crowds home and away in the division. There's certainly a buzz when you attend your ground, you know, and speaking from to your guys. And I guess you mentioned you know, the counties that you have to travel in this division. The biggest issue is normally making that step up to step two is the travel cost. But you've almost been experiencing that this year anyway.
Yeah, I think Hendon said it was their longest ever midweek away trip. Well, we went to Avely on a Monday night in the trophy, the trophy replay, which was a killer, absolute killer. You know, with hindsight, the game was in the balance. We wanted to get it on a Saturday because you want to play. We could have quite easily had the game called off and dragged them here on a Wednesday. But who knows what would have happened. But that was, again, a cracking game in difficult conditions. Another 3-3. I think this year, you know, the entertainment of the ball sponsor, they come down once a year to sponsor a ball. They said, what a fantastic game. I said, yeah, for the neutral. not necessarily for Rob, our head of football, and everybody else associated with the club. But I think that's also why we love non-league football. It's not predictable. That's the one thing. I know football in general is not predictable. I think the only predictable thing at the top level now is VAR annoying people and not, you know, not improving the game, which is surely what law changes are about, improving the game. You know, the offside is ridiculous now. Just make it clear daylight. You want to see goals. Rugby and cricket have generated their sports on the back of seeing more tries, more points, and cricket seeing more boundaries. And that's what, unfortunately, fans will want to buy into today. With football, you want to see goals. So you want to give the striker a chance of, you know, if a fingernail's offside, that's ridiculous. But when you get people sat behind desks making decisions on the laws of the game, who are past officials, I think you've got a problem, because you should be speaking to the officials and the clubs and asking for their input. You know, what do we want to see improved? I think on Sky Sports News last night, I saw a handball where the guy turned his back and it's hit his arm. Well, that isn't handball. I'm sorry, you know, that he's made no attempt. There was a word we used to use, was intent, and that wasn't intentional. You know, the guy's turned his back and it's hit him on the arm. His arm was down by his side. That's not a handball in my book.
And I think the fact that these decisions of a VAR are being made in the comfort of a warm studio in West London probably says so much about the way the game could be heading if it follows that route.
Yeah, rugby it works, but people have got to understand with rugby, the referee's right in the action. He's controlling the forwards and he's there. So, and most often, the referee is asking for confirmation. He's made his decision. He wants confirmation. He said, you know, I heard it on, I think I was watching on Channel 5 when I got home. It was the rugby highlights were on. And he said, I think it's a try. Can you confirm? And that's all he's asking for. And it's a different game. You know, let's not make it, you know, the fact it's not the same game, you know. Football is a three-dimensional game, and it's very hard because the ball can go any way in seconds.
That's where we need that game at the highest level to be the same game that we're playing on a Saturday at Not League. Yeah, Kevin, I could talk to you forever, and we probably would. But I suppose before I let you go, I should also make a big mention of the big game you've got. Sunday the 19th of April, Taunton Town Legends against Premier League Legends. What can you tell us about that?
We did Man United Legends last year against our Legends, which was a cracking day. Another 3-3 draw, but we must make a habit of that. And obviously this year we were talking to Liverpool, but it didn't quite come off. So they've probably got their eyes on other things this year. And so it's a Premier League Legends 11, and we've got, you know, it's quite good in a way because it obviously opens it up to Man United, Liverpool, Newcastle, Blackburn, Crystal Palace, Aston Villa. So we've got some great names: Lee Hendry, John Beresford, I'm just trying to think off the top of my head. Mickey Gray, Alan Kennedy. Now, someone spoke to me about the game and said, will Steven Gerrard be coming? I said, well, probably not. He's under contract to Rangers for a start. It's on a Sunday, so he might have a game. But I said, you know, you do know that football did exist before 1992, don't you? And I said, you know, I said, Alan Kennedy might not play in the Premier League, but he played in what was before the Premier League. It was called the Football Championship. I said, he's played 23 times for his country. He scored a winning goal in the European Cup. You know, that was a cup when it was a knockout basis, so harder to win. And he also scored the winning penalty in another season in the European Cup. So to me, he's a proper legend. And these guys didn't earn the money that's available today. You know, Neil Mellor, another guy that played, you know, virtually a full season at Liverpool. David Thompson will be coming as well, another full season at Liverpool. And these are guys that, you know, it's not, they don't hand their contracts at these Premier League clubs, do they, for fun. These guys have earned their contracts. And so we're hopeful that people want to support us. This will be, we'll give it a break next season. And it's just, again, it's that disrespect of not respecting what these people have achieved. And, you know, I think it's quite good to do. You know, probably we should have called it Premier League All-Stars rather than Legends, because people, so, you know, probably quote the legend title. But to me, anyone who's played in the Premier League or the Championship is a legend. You know, they are players that, you know, didn't play for a little bit. They've had careers, and they're technically, when you see them, they're still fantastic. And the good thing is we do it legend side, so it's similar age types playing against each other. So it's an even contest. We don't want to put a, you know, Premier League under 23 side out against a legend side. Yeah.
Hopefully by then the weather will be far more embracing for a bigger crowd. Sunday the 19th of April down in the West Country. Kevin, I better let you go because you've probably got a pitch to get prepared.
It's poured down here overnight, so we're staying off it today. We're not due on it until the 14th when we play Merthyr. So we'll wait for a bit of dry weather and then we'll be getting on the pitch when we can and start repairing a few of the soft patches.
And doing your other duties as well that go with being involved with a football club. Kevin, yeah. Best of luck at the weekend and best of luck for the rest of the season. And thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show.
Brilliant. Thanks, Tim.
Now, we've already made reference to the non-league community rallying around each other this week, the groundsmen of the country as well, helping each other in times of need. So there was only one other place to go. It was the Goalkeepers Union, of course. My days between the sticks, seemingly long gone, but I'm always keen to give some added support to those who still ply the trade. Step forward, or perhaps roll forward, our next guest, who is gearing up for a wheelie big task. He's going to cycle 145 miles from Sheffield to Amsterdam in June, raising money for Prostate Cancer UK. To tell us more, welcome to the Non-League Football Show. Goalkeeper for Midland League Division 2 side Coventry Alvis, it's Jack Hartop. Welcome, Jack.
Hiya, thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure, Jack. Now, 145 miles, that's a long way to be sat on a bike. Have you ever done anything like this before?
If I'm honest, this is completely new to me. 145 miles seems like quite a lot. My training at the minute is going well, so it should be fine. It's broken into 20 miles, so I've been advised by a lot of people to train for about 50, 60 miles solid. And on the day, you should find a 20-mile interval quite, you know, a bit better, really. I haven't done anything like this before at all. It's new to me. It's something I wanted to take part. I just wanted to challenge myself, really.
And you mentioned you know, that training. It's not ideal in this weather, especially not when you're also juggling and I guess working too. How does the play-work balance normally work, and how's it working when you've got to get these number of miles on a bike in as well?
It's difficult at the minute because I'm not an experienced bike rider. So cycling-wise, it's difficult because I'm getting home. It's dark, it's windy, it's wet. So a lot of the I'm getting out when I can, but a lot of the training in the gym at the moment. So it's difficult, especially working. I mean, I live in Coventry, work in Birmingham, so my day turns into 12-hour days. So I'm getting back, and it's, you know, a long day. It's hard to get motivated, but with the sponsorship and the way it's gone, it's ticking me over, really. It keeps pushing me. It keeps me on my toes. And it keeps me wanting to get out there.
Yeah, you're raising funds, of course, for Prostate Cancer UK. Yeah, you've already had some great backing from the non-league fraternity, haven't you?
It come from nowhere, really. My club, Coventry Elvis, sponsored me, and it sort of gave me the idea, really, to, you know, I can really push it within Midland Football League. And the response was brilliant. I've had over 40 Midland Football League clubs from, you know, Division 3 to the top of the Prem. And then, so, you know, I'm trying to go up the leagues now. I've got Aldo in town on board. Tamworth wants to get on board as well. So if I can get teams from higher up the ladder, that's absolutely brilliant. Hopefully get a professional team on board as well. That'd be absolutely brilliant. Look, for me, I've had a lot of clubs. I've unfortunately been a bit of a journeyman in my short football career, but it sort of opened up a lot of links for me, really. So it's been off.
The wonders of the non-league link-up. Tell us more about the challenge and also the team that you're part of as well.
Okay, so it's across 2 days. You do the first day, 80 miles. You go from Sheffield up to Hull, which is the most challenging part of the journey. People I spoke to said it's a lot of hills on the first day. When you get to Hull, it's actually a break. You get on the overnight ferry to Rotterdam. And the second day, which is quite nice, it's nice and flat. So with tired legs and achy legs, it shouldn't feel too bad, to be honest.
And I guess you've then got a lift back, have you? You haven't got a cycle all the way home as well?
I'm doing a bit. I'm trying to go through the hilly routes at the minute. I've luckily got quite a few hills around me, so it's sort of not, it'll probably be different on the day. But, you know, I'm trying to train as much as I can on hills, and, you know, if it's easy, then I'm quite lucky, but if not, hopefully I'm ready for that challenge.
And raising funds for Prostate Cancer UK, as I say, they've been closely linked with Non-League Day and football as a whole. Is it a charity close to your heart as well?
It's not really. I know a couple of people who have been affected by it and who have lost people through it. I haven't personally got a link. The way it's come about, and every year I've tried to do something for prostate cancer, and it's sort of come from, you know, your Jeff Stelling, when he was doing his walk a couple of years ago, and he's carried that on. He's raising, you know, £1 million a time. You know, he's raising a lot of money, and you know, the backing he has from the Premier League, it's sort of, you know, I want to do a little bit. So it started off with something small, like November. Had a moustache for November, raised £300. It sort of started from there. So I do a lot of the March for Men's that they do around Birmingham. But this year, I just wanted to really push myself and, you know, really challenge myself and try and raise as much as I can. I was panicking about raising the original target of 1,250 that Prostate Cancer set. But, I mean, the support I've had, I've tripled my target now. I'd love to get £5,000 if I could.
Well, tell us, how can people get involved and back you then, Jack?
So what I'm asking, I started off by asking companies, a lot of local businesses, for £20 sponsorship, and you get your logo on my jersey. And then once I sort of exhausted a lot of my friends and people close to me, I thought, you know, football clubs, okay, I'll push that. So what I'm asking for is clubs up and down the country, wherever they are, it's £20. Once that donation's made, your club logo will be on the jersey. It's filling up quite nicely. There's still lots of space for clubs to get on. But I mean, if they're interested, it's fantastic. I mean, it'll be absolutely great, and it helps me a long way to go towards £5,000 as well.
Well, it's a fantastic cause, Jack. And I have to say, obviously, stereotypically and traditionally, goalkeepers aren't built for lycra. Are you going to go to full kit and caboodle?
Yeah, it should be interesting. I'm a big lad, so it's going to be quite skin tight. It should be quite an interesting sight, if I'm honest.
Well, we look forward to seeing that interesting sight. And again, Jack, remind people, what's your Twitter handle so they can follow you and maybe get involved?
So my Twitter handle's at JackHartop1. I'm not a private account, so it should be easy to follow. If they want to drop me an email, that's Jack.Hartop, harpopp at hotmail.co.uk.
Brilliant stuff, Jack. We wish you well, and well done from everybody involved in Non-League for doing this. And we look forward to hearing from you once you've reached the other end of the line.
Yeah, it should be fine. I might have to take a few days off work just to recover. But, I mean, love the show, and I wish you all the best. Thank you for having me on. It means the world.
So let's round off the show and head on over to Non-League Paper Towers. Welcome back to the Non-League Show. Senior writer at the Non-League Paper, David Richardson. Welcome back, David.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for having me on, as always.
Always a pleasure. Now, it's cold and it's damp, but enough about the offices at Non-League Paper Towers. let's talk about Non-League football. And, should we start with the FA Vars and FA Trophy? Quarter-finals last week, as much as they could be played.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, obviously, sort of half of our sides have played. Obviously, Aston against Concert and Corinthians against Leighton, unfortunately, fell foul of the weather. But did get the other two games on. Obviously, Bicton, I think, probably the surprise result for me, really, winning 4-0 at Wroxham. Really didn't see that coming, to be honest. I think Wroxham, the likes of Grant Holt, I think, you know, you'd have looked at them as the favourites for that one. So, a great result for Bicton. And obviously, Heaven beating Ferris Parkway in a tie that was sort of dubbed the, you know, maybe the favourites to get to the final. So, yeah, interesting that Heaven came out on that one, and they'll be going to either Corinthians or Leighton Town in the first leg of the semi final, whilst Bicton will take on one of Astoma Concert. Those two replays are being played on Saturday.
Yeah, and in the trophy, we got most of them played, and they're all been played now. So we know who's going to be participating in the semi-finals. But you had a slightly aborted trip on Saturday, I hear.
Yeah, unfortunately, it was a weekend where I was able to get out of the office and get out to the game. But unfortunately, my pick of Concord against Royston was postponed an hour before kickoff. That was a disappointment for myself, and particularly the sort of six coach loads of Royston fans that had already arrived by the time the game was called off. That game was played on Tuesday night in the end, which Concord Rangers came through 2-1 after extra time. And now they'll take on Hells Owen in the semi-final over the two legs. That's a really interesting one. One of those clubs will be getting to the final. Hells Owen have obviously had a wonderful trophy run. They've played 13 games in the trophy so far, which is remarkable. And coincidentally, really, they're not actually that far behind on their league games. I think they've only got two in hand to play. But Hells Owen obviously are front page on last Sunday's Non-League paper after they they won at Barnet after extra time. Another fantastic result. They've taken so many scalps in the competition. They've beaten Maidenhead, Gateshead, Bradford Park Avenue on their way to the semi-finals. Really remarkable run. And in the other semi-final, you've got a really good tie as well. Harrogate against Knox County, two National League teams that are both going really well in the league. The first tie will take place at Harrogate, who are trying to get to Wembley for the first time in the club's history, and obviously I expect a big Knox County following to go to that one. And then obviously going back to Notts in the second leg, that'll be a really great game. Hopefully there's a lot riding on that after the first tie. What I would say, I think, you know, in recent years, maybe the trophy has sort of lacked a bit of excitement, lacked these sort of upsets that we're seeing from Hells Owen and, you know, the likes of Concord and Royston getting this far. It really has been a fantastic year for the trophy, and I think it's only going to get better really in the semi-finals and final.
Yeah, and it's interesting to see, isn't it, that you mentioned Hells Owen doing well in the league as well, and Harrogate, they're in the semi-finals of the trophy, but they're probably keeping up pressure upon Barrow at the top of the National League as well.
Yeah, they are only 5 points off. They had a fantastic win on Tuesday night. Obviously, last Saturday they went to Fylde and won 3-2 after extra time in the trophy. Then were back on the road to Chesterfield on Tuesday where they won 4-3. Jack Muldoon getting an injury time winner. I spoke to Jack yesterday, who also scored twice in the game at Fylde. And you know, he was just saying really about sort of the togetherness that the club has and sort of how grounded and humble the club is, really. And I think that is a very fair point. It's not a club you hear shouting from the rooftops about the success that they've had or, you know, the ambitions that they have as a club. It seems very grounded to me, and that comes from the manager, Simon Weaver, who has obviously been there a long time and is and slowly building the club with his dad is the chairman. And you know, now they're still reaping rewards having reached the playoffs last season. It's often so difficult to, you know, progress the following season after having a success like that. But they've certainly done that, and now they're the closest rivals to Barry, really. I can only see Harrogate being the other likely team to be in with a shot with the title, and I'm sure they'll push them all away and want to finish as high as they can, regardless of what happens with that. But to also be in the trophy semi-finals as well is really impressive.
Yeah, and who'd have put Barrow and Harrogate at the top of the start of the season, eh?
Mm.
That means that there's also it shows a competitiveness across not only in the National League but also you know, further down the leagues as well. Everything seems to be still very close. We've got a couple of runaway, you know, maybe runaway winners at the moment, but not as we've seen in previous seasons. And it looks like, you know, many of the divisions are going to go down to the wire. Other big news this week, well, certainly since we last spoke, includes the latest England C squad from Paul Fairclough ahead of their game against Wales at the end of the month.
Yeah, that's right. The latest squad has been released, and with the England C obviously heading to Wales, as you say, later this month. It's sort of a third part of a trilogy of matches that they've played. They've had a couple of clashes, one that England C won 3-2 a couple of years ago with Frank Nabeiri, who's now at Doncaster, scoring a hat-trick that night. Round about this time last year, they played again at Salford City in a really entertaining 2-2 draw. And it's great sort of seeing this England C side, because obviously, as we know, it's an under-23 side. So it's sort of packed with the sort of hottest talent, really, in non-league. And it'll be an interesting clash against Wales, too, because the Wales C side doesn't have any restrictions on their age group, so you know, they'll have some streetwise players and players that have been around the block and have plenty of appearances on under their belt, etc. So it'll be another interesting tie there. Looking forward to seeing how the likes of Kurt Willoughby, Wes Fongak, Kane Smith, you know, players who have been involved in the England team in recent years have progressed. Obviously Kane Smith back in the fold at Bournemouth after having a really sort of nasty knee injury, but he's back and playing well for Luke Gallagher's side. And there's also the likes of Ben Goodliffe at Sutton United, son of Jason, who I think most people remember as the sort of no-nonsense Stevenage centre half, who's actually the Sutton assistant manager now. But Ben's got a call up. He's been impressive this season at centre half, so looking forward to seeing him. So there's plenty of interest right across the team.
Yeah, and we normally we open this little section with a discussion about the managerial merry-go-round. It's been fairly quiet in the managerial stakes this week. I guess the only big news, and not too surprisingly given results and standings, Lee Clark leaving Blyth Spartans this week.
Yeah, as you say, not sort of a massive surprise really to see that. Obviously, Lee Clark went in there with obviously a history of managing in the Football League. Obviously, coming down to National League North, you know, was a surprise, I suppose. But maybe it was sort of the only way he could get back into the game, and he felt he had to go into the club there. But you know, when he took over, the club was obviously in a really difficult state, down at the bottom of the division, and they're still there, unfortunately. Only 23 points on the board from 32 games, and they've played four more than Gloucester, who sit above them, 6 points above them. So, I mean, yeah, not a massive surprise really to see that decision's been made. Obviously, I'll probably say disappointing from a non-league point of view that that's happened. You always sort of expect a manager sort of like that to have an impact and bring good profile to non-league and lots of interest. But clearly, it hasn't worked.
Yeah, well, hopefully you'll be back involved with the non-league game very, very soon. You've already mentioned, obviously, we've got the two FA Vars quarterfinals to be being played this weekend. But what else can we expect to read in this weekend's non-league paper?
Yeah, so we've followed up the FA Trophy draw. And Matt, like I said, went down to Concord on Tuesday night. And after the game, he caught up with manager Danny Scopes. And has written a really nice piece with him, talking about sort of when he very first joined the club. You know, because he's been there for a long time. He once, of course, had Danny Cowley as assistant manager before they became joint bosses in 2008. So, you know, it's a club that really means something to him, and he's been around there for a long time. I've spoken to Simeon Coburn at Hells Owen, who scored their winning goal at Barnet. He says how he thinks that they can cause another shock in the semi-finals. We've got Colin from Steve Hill, who's been on his travels again, watching Chester. Talks a little bit about the issue of postponed games. Matt's also spoke to Ross Hanna, who's leading the line at Cleethorpes Town. Of course, Ross has been around the non-league scene for a while, so it's always good to hear his thoughts. John Couch has spoken to Michael Doyle after making his 800th appearance of his career in Notts County's fixture the other night. So there's plenty in there. Like I said earlier, I spoke to Jack Muldoon at Harrogate about their trophy run and their league season campaign. So plenty in there for all levels, as usual, and all the reports. Just hope we can get some games on.
Yeah, let's hope there'll be plenty of reports to read as well. So, David, thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show again, and have a great weekend.
Brilliant. Thanks, Tim.
So that's it for this week. Thanks again to all of our guests. Thank you once again to all of you for listening to. Don't forget, you can follow us throughout the season and join us throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show and Dave Anderson's at Dave Anderson 78, Caroline Barker at Caroline Barker, and myself at Tim Fuel. Look out for a new gaffer tapes, hopefully Monday lunchtime coming. Plus, of course, you can find the previous episodes and every episode of the Non-League Football Show on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, via your smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. Thank you and goodbye.
Jabber Production. JIBBA JABBA.